The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that,
Ern?
The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
And back!
Spooky month!
I'm having a tired morning.
Happy Halloween! It's podcast
number 208.
That's officially how many you should be at after 4 years.
Yeah.
If you did one every week. 208 shows, so we've
hey, perfect.
There you go.
4 years a while ago.
We're all caught up.
Once again, I'm Melissa, and I'm here with John, Sue, and Frack, and you're in for another week with the number one Harry Potter podcast online with woo-hoo! Harry Potter series with questions and news and chat and John being stupid.
Yay.
Yay.
Holy cow, well, it's a big Halloween show, guys. We have your news, and then another special Halloween version of the Potter Pundit.
Mm-hmm. Wait, return is it the special holiday thing or the second half of it?
It's the second half of the Gothic.
How talk. Special is that? I want to.
It's super
now.
Special. Everybody's waiting for that one.
What is happening in the news this week, the Sues?
And now we turn to regular contributor for an update on how the new Wizarding Order is affecting the Muggle world.
We have a lot of news this week, including Deathly Hallows stuff, but before we get to that, we have a really cool report from Harry Potter the Exhibit, which opened in Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh.
And our own Melissa Nelly, that would be you, Melly.
Yes.
We're there. And you got to talk to our friend Matt Lewis, Neville yeah. Longbottom.
That's so wonderful.
Hey, we should put in a clip of that little bit right into the show.
We're going to start doing the final scene, the final battle. This is like the culmination of what has it been, almost 10 years of work now. So what's that like?
It's weird, really. I mean, I'm not so much thinking about it as being the end, but you guys keep reminding me. but yeah, I'm just sort of, it's weird. It is all coming to an end, you know, come next summer, the actual film, I think around May, June, to finish. And it's weird, I mean, we've been together for, like you said, nearly 10 years, and I've made some incredible friends, not just in the cast, but in the crew as well. And obviously, being an actor, I'm not going to have that safe net of Harry Potter as well there. So it's going to be a bit strange and quite daunting. Whilst at the same time, I acted from 5 to 11 doing different stuff, and then from 11 to now doing just Neville. So I'm looking forward with great anticipation, really, to getting out there and playing another character. I mean, as much fun as Neville's been for the last sort of nearly 10 years, it's been, you know, so wonderful playing him. He's such a beautiful character, so lovely. But you know, I get to go out there and be challenged as an actor and try something else, which I can't wait for.
I think maybe he asked Joe all those years ago who he was going to marry, and she's like, I'll tell you if you don't tell anybody until 2009.
Little known fact, if you've read Harry History, Matt Lewis is the only cast member to ever turn away information from J.K. Rowling because he wanted to read it in the book.
Aww.
Really? She tried to tell him. A week before Deathly Hallows came out, she walked up to him and said, you know, there's some great stuff coming in Deathly. He went, don't tell me! I don't want to know. Right in the middle of the premiere party. Don't tell me, you don't take it rolling.
Awesome. I bet she's not used to that. Because, you know,
well,
only one other person did that, and his name's Richard Leaf, and she had notebook after notebook that she was going to give to him about the character, and he's like, no, I need to know, I need to read it for myself, and if not, I need to hear it from John, because it's his life after all.
But you know how traumatic that would be to know how many times Dawlish has been pwned, though? I mean, why would you want to read that?
No.
So, why would he want that?
You know how many different versions she went through to
get
that?
Now we're going to talk about House Elves.
No, we're not. We're going to talk about why Neville is going to have a leaner look in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, because he's bad.
Okay.
And this
are you,
right,
are you suggesting Pottercast follow some kind of template in what we
not at all. Everything is so
no, I want to talk about Neville because he's going to be so cool in this movie. And Melissa got a great...
Finally, at long last, they have ditched the fat suit. Neville finally going to look like Matt, who's a good-looking kid, you know?
He's like the best-looking guy in the cast, isn't he?
Sure.
That's what I've always been hearing from whenever people see him without his suit on and everything.
He's just a very nice guy and naturally funny, and it was great to have this kid event that he was.
Is he pursuing acting, or is this just Neville is something he's doing?
No, he's pursuing acting. His brother, actually, when they started all this, his brother was already on a soap opera in Britain.
Hey.
Oh, cool.
Adrian's his father. Oh god, I forgot his brother's name. I feel bad. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Something Lewis.
It's something Lewis. Anyway, yes, he's an acting kind of family, but they're not. It's not like a show busy family. You know what I mean? They're very down to earth and chill. So
like,
yeah, no
me and my brother
because,
all
because he's been right.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no fast food because he's been like work. He's been like living on the road or whatever. So or like living on, you know, living under the radar. So he's lost weight, and when we talked to him, he just said, "Yeah, you know, this week we're gonna be filming the final battle." And I'm sitting in a room with plenty of, you know, a couple of big fans, but a lot of media and whatever, and nobody did the intake of breath that I did.
Oh yeah.
Well, you can't just say that.
You can't say that. I would have been the same way. I've been like, what?
So
my voice would have went up 5 octaves.
Everybody's there to talk about the museum, and I'm like, well, I don't care. So, Matt, about Deathly Hallows.
Awesome.
You can't put him in a room with Leaky and Mother Men, etc., and expect us to ask you about the museum. It's just not.
Well,
it's
the same museum as they had in Chicago, isn't
it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Do they add anything new?
No.
So where's the new story?
It was still great. I mean, it was still great.
I'm sure. I can't wait to see it myself.
Now, Melissa, having seen like the stuff at Warner Brothers lot like 4 years ago, or 3 years ago, like when we went on that little tour. How much, how much of it was new from those props that we got to kind of peek at there?
A lot.
Okay, cool.
There's a lot more than what we saw on the Warner Brothers set. It's a very extensive collection, but as I asked them during the interview, how extensive, what portion of the options does this represent? How much more would you have liked to get on there? And they were like, and they just got this faraway look in their eyes, like they want to bring probably 100,000% more than they have. That's to give the idea of the scope of what is at least in Pinewood. But they wouldn't reveal anything, so I said, like Dumbledore's chair? And they all started laughing. And so it makes me think that Dumbledore's chair is on the list. It's extensive, but it also gives you the distinct impression that there's plenty more.
Yeah.
Some of it's really good. You listen to the audio thing, and you hear, instead of like a museum guide, you hear people like Stuart Craig and Jamie... the costume woman, and Nick Dudman, the creatures guy, talk about it. And sometimes you hear a really good tidbit, and sometimes it's a little not a really good tidbit, like they were talking about the golden egg. And now you get up close to the golden egg, and it's this large object, it's got carvings in it, you know that we know from the movie that it opens, and it's all this stuff. And the only thing that the audio thing said was, well, whenever the kids get a new prop, it takes them a while to, like, work with it, and it's fun to watch them kind of... I was like, well, I don't care about that. Tell me how you made the stupid egg, you know, like that.
Yeah.
So once in a while, it's something like that, but mostly it's a really cool interactive and learning.
How did they come up with the actual technology to make it, like, sing underwater and be noisy outside of the water?
I have a feeling that was the magic of editing, John.
Oh, no. They're really good actors, then, to pull that off convincingly. Wow.
But we should point out that this exhibit is in the Museum of Science in Boston, and it's open now until February 21st of next year, so it's available. Yeah. You should go, right, Melissa? You would recommend it?
I would recommend it. It's for a hardcore Harry Potter fan, literally, this will be the only opportunity you have to see some of the astounding detail. Not even in the movies. When you walk around, I mean, I don't think that it's something that every Harry Potter fan would be into, but I do think that if you are a serious Harry Potter fan, like everybody listening to this podcast is, watch the movies, you will never, ever, ever see some of these things. You go up to the Miniature Magic poster, And there's, I mean, you read the whole poster, and on the bottom, in the tiniest script, like small print on a contract, it has, you know, Property Ministry of Magic, and the trademark number of the poster, and a serial number, and it's just like, who would ever put that detail in there? It's never going to be seen in the films. It just gives you the idea of the complete absorption that the craftspeople have done.
I want to see
and
it.
And literally, it is the only chance for people offset to see these things.
I'm going to go. I heard Lucius's robes are not actually black because of the camera, that they can't have it right, so they're like dark kind of green.
What's astounding is Voldemort's robes, they're green.
Yeah.
And they're green and silver, and it looks like the colors are flowing between the two because it's so light. It's almost not real.
I saw his robes and Umbridge's costume over down at Fidham. And they do an exhibit every year before the Oscars about all the nominated
right.
And just films from that throughout the end. I got to see that not this past year, but the year before. It's really cool.
Do they have his trench coat?
Dawlish's trench coat?
Yes.
No doubt.
They had the dummy of Mrs. Longbottom standing on top of it.
Oh, how are you supposed to see it? You can't appreciate the full length and beauty splendor of the robe of the trench coat.
Yeah.
That's awesome, Frankie.
Wow.
I want that display. I'm going to start a petition. We need to see that display set up. We'll call those people up and say, please.
That's awful.
That would be great.
Guys, I have 2 pages left in my sketchbook.
Uh-oh.
Are you going to do Dawlish costume on the trench coat on the ground?
Which sketchbook is this, Doodles?
This is my most current one.
Oh.
I mean, not one I'm selling again. I'm not going to do that for, like, probably another month.
Okay, number 4 in news. This is really pretty cool. They have now announced open casting calls for Wizarding World of Harry Potter theme park.
Awesome.
And this is interesting, that the first ones are going to be for men and women, but for mostly for male actors in the mid-30s and mid-40s who can do improv, and they can do British accents. Interesting.
Well, that's obvious. I mean, they're just going to be interacting in the park, and improv just means that you can, you know, go back and forth with the people at the park and stay in character.
But you know, are you
laughing?
I'm just imagining all these ridiculous, like, improv things that have nothing to do with Harry Potter, but they're doing it in a British accent. It's like, hi, Oprah! It's just, like, stupid improv. Sorry. It was funny in my head, and all the kids are kind of, like, standing around, like,
what's going on here? I want a churro.
I want a churro. I want a cinnamon wand. They should call churros cinnamon wand.
I'm not gonna have churros. Ooh.
They're gonna have cinnamon wands.
Oh, maybe a cinnamon wand. That'd be fun if it was a cinnamon wand.
Well, I'm very excited for this, and I'm sure there'll be more casting calls. Everyone's like, oh, how come they're not doing younger ones? I'm sure that they will, but this is the good sign that this is actually officially now starting to happen. It makes it seem more real.
Yeah.
And those are going to take place on November 14th and 15th, and we have the link and information on our website, so check that out.
Cool.
I wish I could do a proper British accent.
Yeah, I have to. There's one thing about the Boston exhibit. The people all do British accents, and some of them were not as good as others.
Oh, so there is hope for me.
Well, the Boston accent is hard to overcome.
Yeah.
I wondered how that was going to be, Millie, because I remember I posted that story about them hiring people that could do the British accent. I didn't know if they'd actually employ them.
Some of them are very good. Some of them have a little Boston in their
England. In their tea potty.
They just came over. They
Boston's like the sworn enemy of Britain.
Hmm?
Isn't Boston like the sworn enemy of Britain?
Well, the tea party?
We started. Yeah, Boston's sort of where we started to break away from them, John.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, they don't like each other too much.
Yeah, but still today they don't like each other.
I'm actually impressed that they put the exhibit there and that they were okay with it.
Yes, I'm sure the Queen herself got really
the Queen's right.
No, not Boston.
She said. Okay, shut up. All right.
So dorky. I love you all. This is cool, and actually, I think it's actually really, really cool. If you're going to buy the Harry Potter and Half-Blood Prince DVD on Blu-ray on December 12th, you can do a live screening with Dan Radcliffe and David Yates.
Wow. Are they going to be interacting with people on there, too?
Yeah, apparently so. They're going to have via the Blu-ray, the live community screening, and for the 100,000 first fans that register can go and take part of this on December 12th.
Wow.
That sounds fun.
Can you imagine, though? It is. It's kind of like, you know.
People?
Yes. Can you imagine? What, I don't know how to have. How do you have the technology to do that? That many people.
Insane.
I mean, they must have. How many moderators are going to have for that? Because how many.
I don't know if they're
so
all allowed to chat.
You know?
Do you think they're all allowed to chat, though?
I know.
You can't have a chat room with 100,000 people.
It's going to be like
maybe you have 100,000.
No, I think, isn't it just like you see like them in the corner of the screen watching along with you or whatever, and they can give commentary like live or whatever?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be how much we can interact with them.
It's a marketing gimmick.
Actually, I think if you touch the screen and poke Dan's eyeball, he'd be like, ouch!
I love that you just referred to an old leaky design.
Yes! Thank you, Melissa. You just said that fast.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah. My God, the creepy Dan eyes.
The creepy Dan eyes. I wonder if he ever saw that and was like, okay.
I forgot that. I can't remember. I thought it just went like creepy headwig eyes and then that was it. But no, it went creepy headwig eyes and creepy Dan eyes.
Those lips! How can you forget those lips that would come out and like smooch you? That was I remember when
you were
making it.
Right when
Ivy laughed so very, very hard.
You had to click his nose and then he'd kiss you or something?
And I remember when we had our little meeting and you were discussing that. Memories. So
I gotta do something really important here. We need to make Dan give a kissy face.
That was
spend 25 hours on it.
That was back in 2006, right? I can't remember that.
Yeah.
Need to do stuff like that for Deathly Hallows. Hedwig come back to life or something.
I think we need to kill him again.
He's not going
to
die. Hedwig is not dead. She lives.
Aww.
Speaking of Deathly Hallows, okay, there's a lot of stuff that's been floating around about Deathly Hallows, but most of all, and I know a lot of people do not want to read this, but there is a massive spoiler report from
Holy
the
cow.
Weasley wedding that is online.
I read it. Isn't that spoiling?
Well, but there's a lot of people that don't want to know some of the details that you can find in there. I mean, you know, a lot of people.
Like what
details?
I mean,
we'll probably get it when we get the preview, the DVD, but I don't know.
Like what details?
Should I do the spoiler warning? I
mean,
Warning. We're going to learn that the twins.
Uh-oh.
Are going to, you know, you can tell that. One has been injured, and that Ron is going to make fun of him by wearing his own fake kind of mock. I have my own bandage on, too, kind of mocking.
Aww.
You know.
How did he get injured?
From Greta, the ear.
Oh, right, the ear.
Yeah.
Oh,
really?
I'm joking.
Holy.
I'm a professional
you could come
on this
up
book.
With. And, you know, I mean, there was photos, though. What surprised me was the photos that they said were drawn inside of Luna's house. I was kind of surprised that they were able to get away with that. It exists. Interesting, too, that we learned that Madame Maxine is back at the dancing for the wedding.
Hey-o.
With Hagrid. I mean, okay.
Okay.
You know.
Good.
You know.
Good. I'm glad to hear that they are bringing, because it's a very important part of the Deathly Hallows. You see all the characters that have been part of the story for so long, and to ignore that in the movie would be bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right. Do we even see Madame Maxine in the seventh book?
No,
not at all. So that's interesting.
That was really interesting when I thought about it. I'm like, wait, the Pegasus didn't come over and like kick a giant in the face? I'm like, no.
You know what they're probably doing, and because of the way they sort of glossed over it, instead of having the whole story between Madame Maxine and Hagrid, since it's Fleur, so you have to identify her to the people who've seen her from movie 4. So you have to have a lot of Beauxbatons imagery in there. So they probably have a lot of Beauxbatons people.
That's smart.
There she is, yeah.
Since we haven't seen her since movie 4.
What if, like, in order to get over the whole idea that there was a relationship, like, there's this big elaborate thing where Madame Maxine, like, sells Fleur to the Weasleys?
No.
And, like, it's an arranged marriage?
No.
And that's why she's there, just kind of handling that transaction?
Did you pull the plot from a bad soap opera? Like, what?
No.
I could totally see that. Madame Maxine, we don't know much about her. She could be into that kind of trade.
Well, I'm more curious on how they're going to explain the return of Bill Weasley, the brother that we never knew about.
Is the same actress for Fleur?
Yes. Clemence is coming back, yeah. And, you know, but the report contains, you know, colors of the wedding and just little minor things that most people won't. But there's a lot of people that are trying to avoid it. And so the link is on Leaky if you want to read it. But speaking of coming back for Deathly Hallows, Melissa, like you were just talking about, we learned from Matt, we've heard from many other actors that they were going to be filming starting the Battle of Deathly Hallows this month, including from Mr. Chris Rankin, who also updated us as we're recording this right now, today, there are 43 of the principal cast members on set for Deathly Hallows.
you think there's going to be a memo passed around said about Twitter?
you'd wonder. It's such a different experience now. I'm just thinking, like, how much did we find out as, like, Chamber and all the other ones were getting filmed? Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Going to the junket for Leaky was the first time the fans had any kind of input into the questions. We heard nothing until the press machine geared up.
Yeah.
You know?
Now all the kids grew up and they're like, hey, guess what I'm doing this week.
Plus, you know, when they're done, they're going to be sort of out of contract with Warner Brothers. Like, they can worry less.
Like, if you tweet about this, we're not going to invite you back for number 9.
But no, who was that in the news? Maybe you guys will know. Who was the actor that, like, somebody, like, I don't know. I want to say, not Jessica Simpson, but some blonde actress. I mean, they had a rule now that they're not allowed to tweet about some of their films that they're doing. Some other studios are doing that. Gosh, I wish I'd looked that up. That's a good point.
That makes sense. Yeah, there's a lot of information coming out on Twitter, you know?
Yeah, makes sense.
But
Twitter's like upstaging the fan sites.
Well,
yeah.
Oh.
That's you know, this is an actual problem I had with the news, though. That's happening not just fan sites, but with everything. Twitter, I mean, and you know how much of it is accurate. You know, God bless him, but Patrick Swayze died 5 times before he actually passed. You know, so you don't
Kanye
know how,
West recently.
Yeah. See, so there's false rumors that go around. And then, but in the eventuality of, like, things like, say, with the Iran elections, and, you know, there's a lot of good, you know, I mean, there can be good, but sure. I don't know. It's really
Twitter's
an interesting
like
question.
Magic. Whoever it takes on the principles
of the deal. Miley Cyrus deleted her Twitter.
Oh, indeed.
Oh,
no.
Oh, sad.
Her boyfriend told her that she had to. And then she did. And then she made a song about it on YouTube.
Is that any part... I mean, I know she deleted it, right?
Yeah. All that's true.
Her boyfriend told her she had to, so she did. I'm so glad she's a role model for young people today.
And then she tweeted about the fact that
so
the boyfriend wanted her to. And then she denied it afterwards.
The boyfriend what?
Wanted her to delete the Twitter because all of her private life was getting too public and it was annoying or whatever.
Well, I'm so glad she has the capacity to make up her own mind, and I'm so glad that the young people of America are so tuned into what she does. Can we move on? Before I get really angry,
Well, I want to know who those 43 people are. That's what
let's count. Ready? Dan, good. Rupert, good. Emma, not there, because she's supposedly at school. Matt, good.
She's at school?
Emma's at school.
She's all like, I'm in a dorm now. I don't need to film anymore.
I'm sure she's filming. Are you kidding me?
He told me that they're going to fly her all the way back from Brown.
She was just over in Paris doing
her all the way back from Brown. Like, she's going to take the Pony Express. They're going to put her in a first-class Virgin airline.
Yeah.
She goes around all the time. She was just in Paris, you know, like 2 weeks ago for the fashion shows. It's not... Come on. She could be there.
I'm kidding.
It's also... I don't know. I'm sure.
So it's those six. It's those six plus Michael Gambon. Nope, not him.
Why not? He's a ghost.
He's
right.
He's a ghost.
He's a ghost.
McGonagall, Mrs. Weasley, Lucius, Arthur Weasley,
Narcissa.
Are you counting, John? Or are we going to forget how many we're up to?
Frankie's counting.
No, I'm not. I'm growing.
all right. Start again, and I'm
going to
count.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
I kind of
want to
do this now. I'm excited.
Okay.
I know,
Harry.
Harry.
Ron. Neville. Luna. Hannah
Ron.
Abbott.
Joe.
Okay.
Stop.
Wait.
Luna. Okay. The trio. Luna. Neville.
Yes.
Ginny.
Ginny, of
Molly,
course.
Molly. Arthur.
Bellatrix.
Percy.
Narcissa.
Percy.
Bellatrix,
Joe.
Percy. Can we get through the Weasleys first?
Okay.
Yeah.
Percy.
Percy. And we have Fred and George, right?
Fred and George, until he dies.
Fred and George, 12, 13.
Right,
yeah.
I mean, that's part of the sequence.
Charlie. Bill.
We're not seeing Charlie, are we?
Sure we are.
Okay.
Yes.
And then let's do, like, the Gryffindors. Okay, so there's Seamus and Dean.
Mm-hmm. Seamus and Dean.
And what about the Patel twins? You bet they'll be around, right?
Yep.
Patel. Okay.
What's his name?
Joe.
What's the one that's not Colin Grevy anymore? The other one. What's his name?
Well, Dennis. Colin.
Nigel.
Nigel.
Nigel. I don't know if Colin will be there.
Colin won't be there.
They killed Nigel.
They killed Nigel?
No!
Frankie! No! He says it so gleefully. Kill Neville. Kill Nigel.
No, they probably will, because they killed Colin Grevy.
It's sad.
His little body all limp. They had to pick him up with his hammer all broken. They'll probably kill Colin now, because it's sadder.
You're going to have some random old lady at the studio being like, you can't kill a child in a children's movie. They're going to be like,
It starts out with a murder with Charity Burbage, so,
she's not a child. You can kill as many adults as you want, but don't kill a child.
You know what? Fred's dying.
He's too old.
Okay, we're up to 22.
Okay, do we do...
teachers now.
Bellatrix? Are we doing Deathly Hallows?
We got Lucius Bellatrix.
Voldemort.
We did get Lucius Bellatrix and Narcissa.
Narcissa, Draco.
Yeah. Ooh, Draco and his friends.
Boyle.
Boyle.
Not Crab.
Boyle and Blaze, not Crab.
Boyle, not Crab.
Ironically, his name is Blaze.
Yeah, let's say it,
Jamie Whaley will not be returned to Deathly Hallows. He has been asked not to return.
Yeah. They got rid of Jamie and replaced him with a character named Blaze.
But Blaze existed
cool.
before.
Okay. I thought it was just sort of a joke.
Okay, I'm sorry to do this, but before I said we were up to 22, we had Lucius Bellatrix and Narcissa, right? We didn't have Draco, Goyle, and Blaze.
Right. Do you have Voldemort?
I do now.
Voldemort.
What about Pansy Parkinson? Is she in that or did she run away?
I guess. I don't know.
Pansy
Let's not hound her right now.
Pansy
cool.
was
She's
the one
principal.
That stood up like, Pond is right there! And they're like,
Pansy! Yeah.
And we already had McGonagall, right?
No, we didn't have McGonagall.
Sprout's
probably hiding somewhere.
No, she's not.
Flitwick.
Flitwick.
And then Snape.
Snape? Oh, nope. Wait.
No,
Snape's probably not
dead.
Snape.
Yeah, but he's there in
you
the beginning.
You think they'll give him the
is
think
he,
they'll give
he's
him
there?
He runs away. You're right through the bat shape thing. You're right.
Oh, the Carrows.
The Carrows. Wherever they are.
We have Slughorn.
Right. Any of the ghosts?
Hagrid.
Oh, they probably don't film right now.
With Peeves. Are they going to have Peeves? We don't know.
No. Peeves is not happening.
Peeves is in movie world.
What's his name? Sir Cadogan. You know?
Oh, Sir Cadogan. That'd be so much fun to see him.
We're up to 32. We have 11 principals left. Principals.
Okay.
Did you get Lavender Brown?
No.
Good.
Did you get Hagrid?
Hagrid.
Hagrid. And Grops.
And then we've got to get, Warwick Davis as Flitwick. Or I'm Flitwick.
Flitwick
and Griphook, though, right?
Griphook isn't in Hogwarts, though.
Oh, what about... Oh, so who's... there's no goblins there?
No.
Dobby?
I don't think they ever chose a
Remus
Dobby.
And Tonks.
Dobby.
Remus and Tonks. Remus and Tonks.
Creature. Remus. Tonks.
Shacklebolt.
Oh, Dobby's dead. I forgot about that.
Dobby is dead. You're so mean.
No, I didn't mean that. I was like, wow, sorry. We're going to have those again.
I reported this, but I'm pretty sure that Sean Bickerstaff has been asked to come back for Oliver Wood.
Yes.
Yay.
I love Seamus. The continuity from the first movies.
Yes, Seamus.
I don't think I wrote that.
What about Angelina?
I remember.
Is Angelina coming back?
Katie Bell.
Katie Bell.
I don't think they're principals, guys. I don't think these are principals.
Carmichael Flagon.
Well, I'm trying to think who else... Okay, so we've got Voldemort. I'm trying to think who the big...
Has anybody thought to look at the cast list?
Marcus Belby.
Yeah, but people like, Rita's not
Argus
around.
Argus Filch. Madame Pomfrey.
Yeah.
Filch and
Argus.
Pomfrey, yeah.
Filch will be around. Yeah, you're right.
Pomfrey,
and Emma Jones. Yeah, she's so... Some both.
Yaxley.
That
oh,
weird
that
teacher
either?
With
That's
the
a good
purple
question.
Hat that we never know what she teaches.
The arithmetic lady.
Fenrir.
Yeah, Greyback.
Oh, no.
I can't wait till he dies, man. That's what I want to see die. Die, Fenrir.
But the centers aren't principals. Principals.
What
are we up to, Emily? We're getting close, right?
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think we're past 43 now.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
We probably can count as some people that it wouldn't be, like you said, that wouldn't be principals. Because, like, obviously David Bradley's going to be considered a principal.
It's all Filch and stuff.
David Bradley.
Filch, y'all.
But, like, maybe Katie Bell would not be considered.
The Dursleys.
Dursleys.
What are we doing here? Get me out of here. What happened to Kingsley? I thought he was taking care of us.
You know that the Dursleys?
I think that's it, guys. I think that's it.
Can you imagine? I hope they do a group photo of this shoot before they even start or something. Just to, imagine what that's like walking out on that set today with that.
Oh, like a group photo?
Man.
Better.
You can't tell me that they're not
later,
doing,
like
filming major behind-the-scenes
like
documentary
back in the,
stuff
like in
right
the
now.
Future when Dan's son is recording a movie and he can bring out this picture and be like, oh, this is before your parents died. And he's like, but Dad, I'm not dead.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
So random, Frankie, thank you.
I realized that I meant it because I was thinking it was like when Sirius showed Harry the picture of the Order.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, it's like the Order, and then I realized that wasn't Harry. That Harry's dad. That was his godfather.
Yeah.
So I
messed
it
all
derailed
up.
Halfway through.
I'm embarrassed for you.
Should be.
But do you guys agree, though? It'd be criminal if they're not filming some, like, behind-the-scenes documentary footage of all of this.
They better.
It'd be absolutely criminal.
Not even okay.
I can't even imagine. But this is going to take several months to film this whole... I mean, there's so many little things that goes on. You know, right. just the Molly Bellatrix confrontation.
Can you imagine what all they're doing together right now, like, when they're not filming? That's all them just hanging out, like...
Wow.
They probably have, like, so much good food on the set right now, and...
Just imagine that talent, though. I mean, just...
They're probably, like, playing video games and, like, Twister and eating candy.
I'm really seeing Alan Rickman playing Twister.
Truth or Dare.
Yes.
In the bottle.
Him and Fives are playing Twister.
If they're filming the Battle of Hogwarts part, maybe Snape isn't on set, because the Battle of Hogwarts part where everybody's together, it's not Snape.
Yeah. And
Snape's all like, I got eaten by a snake.
Yeah, see, that's why
but
I thought he might...
The Battle of Hogwarts starts with Snape and McGonagall. That's when it
starts.
Yes,
but I'm talking about filming a scene where you need 43 people. You never meet Snape in a room with 43 people in this movie.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he just wanted to hang out. You know, there's probably all of his friends.
I'm sure.
These are all my friends. You know, I want to play hopscotch with these people.
It just has to be really sad when they get together to film. I mean, they've gone from day one here, and they're getting together to film... The final battle, you know?
The same
meeting
same
on the train,
all.
Meeting at the train station, meeting at Hogwarts, and that first look from Snape to Harry, and now we're getting to the giant battle.
I want to cry and throw up at the same time.
Me too, actually. It has been a 35-minute news segment, so I think we can move on.
Yes.
That sounds like
Well, we'll see you guys in the next portion of the show.
Whatever that will be.
Welcome to another segment of Potter Pundits. This is Travis Prinzi here to introduce you to what you're about to hear. This is the second part of a two-part conversation we had on Gothic elements in Harry Potter. The first segment was included in Pottercast 206. It's Halloween time, and it's time to talk about scary stories. This part of our conversation explores more of the Gothic themes that pervade Harry Potter. But in it, we also talk a bit about other great Gothic writers, Anne Radcliffe, Edgar Allan Poe, and H.P. Lovecraft, for example. Great literature reminds you of great literature, and throughout this conversation, Harry Potter kept reminding us of other excellent Gothic stories we'd read. Take these as recommendations for further reading in Gothic literature. Your Potter pundits are John Granger, author of the Deathly Hallows Lectures, James W. Thomas, author of Repotting Harry Potter, fantasy and science fiction scholar Amy H. Sturgis, and myself, Travis Prinzi, author of Harry Potter and Imagination. For more information on the pundits, please visit us. We created an information site, potterpundits.com, just to learn more about us, and we'll be posting some additional information there for those interested in learning more about Gothic literature. And stay tuned, of course, to pottercast.com, where all the action is, where I'll be posting more later this week. We pick up the conversation continuing a discussion of which Gothic elements in Harry Potter are meant to be just parody, and where Gothic elements are meant to be taken much more seriously. We hope you enjoy this, and look forward to further discussion with you.
When Amy said that it's not like Austin, there's at least one point where she does a real hat tip to the scene in Northanger Abbey where Moreland finds this in her Gothic manner late at night. She finds this what seems to be secret handwriting, and she can barely sleep because she wants to know what this thing is. And
right.
Amy starts to laugh because it's what it is in the morning. This dangerous document is a laundry list. Now, that whole book is largely an echo of Radcliffe's The Romance of the Forest, and she hat tips it all through the book, and yet you get this playful mockery about it. And we see that in Prisoner of Azkaban when we see the Grim, you know, that Harry sees this dog that's the death omen. And all through the book we get what in a Gothic novel would be this death omen, this horrible thing. And, of course, it turns out to be his godfather.
Well, we get a heavy dose of it every time we go to divination class, too. Trelawney is the embodiment of the mockery of it all.
The Prisoner, also the book where he's sorting through the Death Omen books and comes across the Broken Balls book. Is that Prisoner? Am I getting that right?
Yeah,
Broken Balls.
It is.
And so there's some humor going on there. He's looking over Death Omens, and that kind of fits with that as well. Now, Amy said in her introductory material that Gothic literature becomes popular during times of social upheaval. Do we see that happening with Harry Potter?
Yeah.
Everybody, who wants to start is the question.
What is stable about the postmodern world? I mean, this is obviously, and our culture is permeated with the Gothic. This is, Amy said, you turn on the television and it's Buffy, and you turn on, you look at the bookshelf and you got Harry Potter and Twilight selling more than anything else. I mean, you have all sorts of paranormal Gothic fiction really taking the forefront in the time when people do feel terror. Not horror necessarily, but just the uncanny feeling that things aren't stable and that there's something just around the corner that's very frightening.
In terms of the power dynamic, the way she sets up the idea that there's people who haven't been represented, who haven't been treated right, who are in these positions of powerlessness, whether it's, you know, the Lupins of the world who are having to deal with all of the regulations and prejudices about werewolves, to people like, the giants who've been driven off of their land and almost driven to extinction. You've got the way that, you know, the goblins have been treated. You've got the way that the house elves have been treated, certainly. The reoccurring theme, even the people that Harry chooses to befriend, you know, the mudbloods and the Weasleys, the mudblood lovers, right? The poor mudblood lovers. You know, if you look at all of that and what she's saying about groups that have been disenfranchised in one way or another, and you know that she's worked, you know, with organizations that have dealt with prisoners of conscience and people whose, you know, civil liberties have been abused in one way or another. And then you look at the way she paints the Ministry of Magic, which I always like to point out, you know, you've got the little brother motif, and here you've got the big mom, the Ministry of Magic. You know, she's saying a lot of things about our times today, the things that bother her about our times. She seems to think that we're at a position of upheaval as well. But also, to turn that around, a time of upheaval can also be a time of tremendous opportunity to do something about it. So.
And I wonder, especially as you're thinking about the timeline of the books, I mean, you've got four books just came flying out up until 2000. Then you've got 2001, when September 11th happened. And then you've got another two-year period, and then you've got the darkest book by far of the series, which we, of course, know alchemically is because it had to be. But I wonder how much influence the sudden world situation had on the portrayal of the ministry in that book. And the constant fear that was gathering, with very few really knowing how deep that fear and threat actually was.
I think you put your finger on it, Travis. In people's experience of the book, when you have before 2001, who knew anything about Osama bin Laden? But after the attacks of September 11th, Voldemort, when we read Order of the Phoenix, seems to be cast in this terrorist mode where we can't find them, we don't know where they are, and everyone is frightened. And some people are denying that they're really as dangerous as they are, etc. I mean, the filter on our perception of the books changed tremendously.
I think it's really significant that it is the third book, that Broken Balls incident you mentioned, that book title, Travis. That's where the unnamed store manager has that conversation with Harry, because Harry can't stop looking at death omens, what to do when you know the worst is coming. Well, it is coming. And I tell my students sometimes, how many ways can we find out how we might die this day just by tuning in Fox or CNN in the morning? And we brainstormed one day, and I said, you know, what are some death omens? What do people fear? So kids start, you know, terror attacks, WMDs, West Nile virus, bird flu. Of course, now we can add swine flu and E. coli on lettuce leaves and lead in toys from China. It never ends. But it's also striking that everything we thought of collectively in class that day was post 2001.
And you can see on and on that list. You're right.
Yeah, it's just so much about fear. Terror and fear, and I don't know about the interrelationship between the two, but a character's attitude toward death or something after death. He pretty much defines what he will fear and to what extent he or she will fear something, I think, throughout the series.
Well, that's the whole story is based on how two people respond to death. How Paul responds to death and how Harry responds to death.
Absolutely. Exactly. You heard me say in Dallas once near the end of my talk, Travis, I was embarrassed, and I said, "What? I'm trying to convince people that these are wonderful literary works, and I come up with, it's they're for love and against fear."
Yeah, but back to Gothic formula, Voldemort, you talked about his reaction to death, he's the classic Victorian Gothic scientist that wants to overcome death by creating a creature that has no conscience. I mean, he is Mr. Hyde. He is Frankenstein's monster. He's this creature without conscience, again, like Count Dracula, that he's basically the undead because he has his body and his mind, his reason. But as Dan Tracy says, reason is the last thing you want to count on in a Gothic novel because it's going to all come down to your conscience and your spirit. And when you realize that there's no life without that conscience or spirit, then you're going to have to either kill this character, which is this undead person who has no conscience, or you're going to have to gain one suddenly. And this book is largely, as Travis said, Harry's pursuit of love and conscience and doing the hard right thing versus Voldemort's becoming, what do you call him, an idol maker. He literally creates things by injecting his soul fragments into material things, thinking that's going to make him live forever. He becomes the quintessential materialist who, without conscience, who is murdering people right and left in order to create means to his own ego's immortality. In terms of the Gothic touches in the book, Voldemort is clearly the Gothic masterpiece in that he embodies so many of the Gothic traditions, you know, single-handedly, and he acts as this foil to Harry. Harry and Voldemort, through their mind link, which is a, I think, a Dracula reference, right? That Mina Harker drinks his blood, and so they have this mind link between the Gothic heroine
with
and
a scar and everything.
That's right, the scar on the forehead. But that link there is to say only one of these characters, as the prophecy says, can survive. You can't do both of these things. You can't choose to be a materialist and an idol worshiper and a murderer and also say, you know, God is love and I'm spirit and conscience and I make the hard choices. I mean, you really have to make a divide there. Are you Harry or are you with Voldemort? And the victory of the story, of course, is that, you know, everybody chooses to be with Harry.
No. Mentioning that, you just made me think of something. If I could just throw it in real quickly, because it's another notion of sort of mind control or possession, the same way that Harry was afraid of what Voldemort was able to accomplish against him, is Trilby, which was George de Maillet's book in 1894, which was a huge hit. He was the father of the author of Rebecca and the Birds, Daphne du Maurier, whose works are modern-day Gothic masterpieces. But in Trilby, it's the story of essentially a man who controls the mind of a young woman. If you read Trilby, the title refers to the young woman, but the man who is described in it, if you read his description, it's Snape. Svengali is his name. And the way Svengali is described with the long, lanky, dark hair, black hair, and the black eyes, and deep set. And if you just read the description, it's Severus Snape, which is really interesting, too, because there's a way she's inverting your expectations again. It just struck me that's a connection that I hadn't seen made before that I think is really I reread it recently, and I thought, oh, my goodness, that's Severus Snape. So,
Snape may be the quintessential Gothic character in the books in that he seems to be a cross between four or five Gothic antiheroes. I mean, clearly he's Heathcliff in terms of his relationship with Lily. I mean, there's this unrequited love that goes on forever and just makes him more and more bitter and angry. I mean, it's his love. It's always I'm with Wooly, whatever. But it doesn't make him any nicer of a guy. He's still this, you know, sadist in the classroom. He hates Harry. I mean, he expresses frustration. He's lived his whole life to save Harry, and now Dumbledore is going to kill him. But he doesn't say, you know, I won't do it. You know, the feeling that he'd be first in line now that it's time to kill Harry, they'll let him have it. But I think he's clearly a scientist who's also that's an accomplished scientist, much like Frankenstein, much like Dracula is actually an alchemist. Count Dracula is actually an alchemist. And when we first meet Snape in the Cauldron, this is not a Trelawney-type cartoon figure. He is a man who's able to stop her death. We find out later. I mean, this guy actually can do, he can deliver on these things in his subterranean dungeon where he works his miracles. He is a very serious scientist that understands the fabric of reality.
His very life, heavy strain of that in Hawthorne with Aylmer and the birthmark and Dr. Rappaccini and other scientist figures.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a big piece of the Gothic is the romantic reaction against scientism, at least. Not science per se, but this idea that we're going to create a world without conscience, without love, and that it's going to be a better place because we're going to have, you know, better sanitation.
Yeah.
we're going to have immunizations, and that's going to mean that we're going to be better people. The Romantics seem to be saying, we want character. We want truth and goodness and beauty, which aren't things you're going to be able to manipulate materially.
If you want a 14-line example of where you were just going, check out Poe's Sonnet to Science with that misleading title that sounds like it's going to be a poem of tribute. Science is a vulture whose wings are dull realities. Sonnet to Science.
Yeah. Well, James, you're the Poe guy. Can you say some things about the pale blue eye? I mean, when we open up Deathly Hallows and Harry looks on, he's on the bed and he sees that mirror fragment and there's a pale blue eye looking up at him. I thought, oh my goodness.
You're thinking of the telltale heart, I take it, old man. The old man and his eye.
Can you tell the story?
The eyes in Poe, when they're embodied, pun intended, in a beautiful woman, are often large, luminous orbs of dark hue, language like that. And the early 20th century Freudian critics, of course, would predictably have a field day with regard to his early loss of his mother, who the only miniature painting of her that survives, her eyes are very, very large indeed. But the other uses of eyes and the obsession with trying not to be looked at or to destroy an eye, these often in male figures, not necessarily evil male figures, sometimes like the old man in Telltale Heart, quite innocent and kindly male figures, but the eye of the black cat that he cuts out. It's just sort of this, don't look at me, because the narrator has all kinds of problems, shortcomings. Poe wouldn't use the word, but, you know, he's obsessed with his own sins, and it, take the eye away, don't look at me.
So the eye is conscience, you think?
Yeah. Very much so in those better-known ones, Black Cat, Telltale Heart. It seems that that's at least one very likely interpretation of it, which is usually not perceived at all by the narrator, but we assume designed by Poe. That gap between Poe and those increasingly unreliable and eventually deranged narrators is another subject entirely. But Amy, what is that in the Gothic tradition? Is there much of that disconnect between or an evolution in a narrator in a Gothic work that he, we're convinced he's sane and under control initially, and then he kind of falls apart before our very eyes, because Poe does that a lot.
You want to talk about Shadow over Innsmouth, don't you?
That's exactly where I was going.
All right.
And that's appropriate, too, because H.P. Lovecraft was a student of and great admirer of Poe. So that fit that he used that as well. But the narrator who begins, well, Lovecraft was all about his concern about entropy, that things were falling apart. And he did this really well by describing characters, entire families that had become disreputable, that had become warped, and the great qualities they once had were gone, and now they were basically demented in one way or another. And actually, the Gaunts in Harry Potter are the perfect example of them. But you also have characters who get into that, discover their background, and Shadow over Innsmouth is the great example there, where the character is sort of thrown into this mystery, and he seems perfectly sane, but the more he discovers about the horrors going around him, he discovers, A, they're horrible, B, that they're related to him in ways he didn't realize, would never have imagined, and C, he's not going to be sane once he gets to the bottom of things. In fact, a lot of characters in Lovecraft's works choose to know, even though they know that they realize that, that what they will discover will destroy them. They'd still rather know and be destroyed than be ignorant and fearful of the unknown. And then there's other stories in which, and I'm thinking like The Color Out of Space that Lovecraft did, and there's other authors that Lovecraft admired who were doing the same kind of thing at the time, where by the end, you're really not certain if you've just been spun a really entertaining tale by a crazy person, or if you've just been told a very factual tale by someone who is incredibly sane, and you're probably going to lose your sanity when it really hits you what you've just been told.
And isn't this what Harry's, this is the story of books 5 and 6, right? I mean, Harry's battle all the way through 5 is, am I possessed by Voldemort? Am I going to end up like him? Yep. And all the way through. And then what does Dumbledore do? Instead of keeping him from Voldemort, he corrects his mistake and spends all of book 6 teaching him the whole history. Here's the history of, and then we find out in book 7, by the way, Harry, you're descended from the same line, Peverell's and down. So the reality was there, and Harry's facing the history of the Voldemort family line and choosing the good instead of the dehumanized Voldemort path. It's the same sort of story.
And clearly wanting to know all along, wanting to know.
This is a real, this is a, I think Amy mentioned this earlier, this is a real Gothic signature, that we have this decay of aristocratic privilege and the rise of the bourgeoisie. We see between the Weasleys, who are kind of middle class people with a lot of kids, I guess they're supposed to be an Irish Catholic family, even though they're not Irish or Catholic. The Malfoys, on the other hand, are this family, sort of the embodiment of primogeniture, that they have this one child on which all their hopes rest, and they're about wealth and prestige, and they're in decay, consequently. Their morality and their character is somehow atrophying, and they're a family that's in decline, if only because they only have one child. Which brings us back to Merope Gaunt, which, and the whole Gaunt family saga, which is really Voldemort's origin story, and that comes from Thackeray's Vanity Fair, in which the House of Gaunt, literally, is the place where the family is cursed by a dark mark on their threshold and the mysterious taint of blood, which in Vanity Fair brings the Gaunts down from great height, their nobility in decline. And we see this as kind of the war going on inside Harry Potter between the Death Eaters, who are these pure blood, you know, nutters, that are this family in decline, fighting off this vibrant new, you know, even their blood traitors. The Weasleys are the future. The Weasleys and their friends are taking over. These Gryffindor types are not the pure bloods. Again, Gothic to the core, aristocracy in decline.
The Dunwich Horror is another example that fits exactly what you're saying, where you have this family that's in decline, and there's always the fear of what intermarriage is doing to the line, which fits beautifully with the whole notion that really there's no pureblood wizards anymore in the wizarding world, but if the Malfoys and their ilk had their way, you're going to have a much, much shallower gene pool to be pulling from. What's going to happen when they've essentially bred themselves out?
Now you've all reminded me of Faulkner and the aristocracy in decline and the Compson family. And
Faulkner's the great Southern Gothic author.
Oh, absolutely.
There.
And there the intermarriage is so parallel with the mudbloods and purebloods and so forth that one drop of black blood is pretty much what Absalom is all about, a father's rejection of a wife and son because of a very slight amount of black blood. Don't get me started on Faulkner, though.
how about I throw out Gothic cliches and you guys come up with this? How about fragmentation and reunion? I mean, all the great Gothic stories, feature breakups and then kind of a miraculous end of story reunion where the Gothic heroine is rescued or whatever. Just to get this started, rather than just challenge you all, name that fragmentation and reunion or whatever. the saddest parts of the books are when the trio break up, for whatever reason, Harry, Ron, and Hermione aren't together, and then there's the joyous return. Even if the joyous return in Deathly Hallows is, not so joyous on Hermione's part or whatever. It's essential to that whole, the whole working of that book, that Ron take off and come back newly illumined. There's the his reunion with his parents. He has his parents are dead, and Rowling tells us there's never gonna be a reunion with Harry and his parents, and yet we get to see them in the Mirror of Erised, and then we get to meet them in the Goblet graveyard, and then Harry walks to his own death with Mom and Dad holding his hand. I mean, we have that Gothic touch. It's one of the nicest things in this orphan story.
So how about the epilogue as a reunion of peace traveling to Hogwarts? I mean, the last time we see Hogwarts, everything's falling apart. There's a big battle. You see the fall of the bad guy. And then 19 years later, they're all back together. There's no war going on. And they're sending their kids off to Hogwarts, which is something of a joyous return after a traumatic battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to end that way in a way, because otherwise, our last look at King's Cross Station is with this very Gothic baby struggling on the floor, screaming that cannot be helped. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is up there with the Harry in the forest with Voldemort, drinking unicorn blood.
Yeah.
It's
right.
This soul fragment on the ground screaming that Harry keeps looking to try to help, and Dumbledore's like, oh, no.
Another one would be the Weasley family becoming whole again when Percy comes back into the fold. Before they have this tragic loss, they are once more the Weasleys in unison facing everything together. And I think that was so important, because that schism, lasted for a couple of books, and you just, felt that niggling at you that you had this family that had stood together against so much had been torn apart. And the fact that they came together again when it mattered most, I think it's really important.
Yeah, it's a beautiful touch. It really is. I, for whatever reason, Molly always has the same number of sons, just about. As Harry becomes a son, Percy has drifted away. When Percy comes back, Fred is gone soon thereafter.
Mm-hmm. And people were telling me that Fred's death was the most horrible moment for them in Deathly Hallows, and I was arguing that Dobby's death was the one that is the real tearjerker. I think the reason that Fred's death isn't that horrific is that he is fighting side by side with Percy as he dies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That they're literally joking and laughing together in this common cause. You think, what could be a finer death for a Weasley? I'm tearing up just thinking about it. It doesn't at all strike as the horror of Dobby returning to the house of Malfoy, Malfoy Manor being, this place of bad faith, quite literally.
And his own slavery for all those years.
Right, and he comes back to the dungeon, whatever. I mean, talk about a Gothic scene, right? The heroine being tortured upstairs. Dobby appears literally with light. I mean, this is a great Gothic scene. And then, of course, he takes a knife in the chest. I mean, sacrificially, and he dies with Harry's name on his lips. I mean, this is Anne Radcliffe plus. This is the Castle of Otranto on steroids.
Oh, and can I have a delayed reaction moment? Going back to your question about Snape and the great Gothic bad guys.
Please.
I was trying to mine in my slowly functioning gray matter here. The one that came out to me beside using the Trilby example was from The Italian, or The Confessional of the Black Penitents by Anne Radcliffe, which is 1797. And the great villain, who you end up feeling quite sympathetic for at the end, although he's horrible, is Scadoni. And he's the kind of mysterious monk who's always in the background, and he's playing politics. He's playing one side against the other. You're never sure which side he's on. And he follows across the country Elena, he's kidnapped her, he torments her, and in the end you realize that he's going to save her life, and he ends up dead by the end. And he's this dark, brooding figure that is incredibly threatening and incredibly astute in the way he plays characters off of each other. And his whole sort of transformation to end up being the protector of the heroine is an interesting thing. And it's certainly a protector who doesn't want to be a protector. It's unwilling, too. But it struck me that Scadoni is a great villain of Anne Radcliffe's, and he's got Snape written all over him.
That's great, because that's much more part of the story than the Heathcliff angle, which we only find out at the very end of the books.
Mm-hmm. True.
Look, we're an hour in and we still haven't talked about Horcruxes, we haven't talked about Dementors. I mean, there are so many gothic elements of this that we haven't even begun to touch on. What about pictures of dehumanization? What about Horcruxes? I mean, there's a history of that. Tolkien traces the history in On Fairy Stories, from all the way back to Tale of the Two Brothers, the old Egyptian tale, to George MacDonald's The Giant's Heart, and just this idea. And then to Rowling does it blatantly, doesn't she, in... what's the fairy tale that she writes? The Warlock's Hairy Heart. This concept that we can protect ourselves from being hurt by encasing part of what makes us human in something else. And that's a very gothic theme, that we can get away from fear, we can get away from pain, we can get away from everything that we normally experience by taking what is essential to our humanity and separating it from ourselves.
Right. And that Hairy Heart story is probably the most concentrated gothic piece that she does.
So, well, we've talked about a lot of different stories today, a lot of literature, and it might be a little bit overwhelming to some readers. Why don't we have Amy give us a few, give the pundits out there a few reading assignments if you want to get more familiar with gothic literature and see how Rowling has borrowed and taken and transformed gothic elements of past literature. Where would you send people to get reading?
Well, several have already been mentioned. Certainly, Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre is a great one. That's the Victorian incarnation of the Gothic. Going back earlier, I think Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley, Frankenstein or The Last Man, really great works. I would also suggest, which you can find online, J. Sheridan Lafleur's Carmilla, which predated Bram Stoker's Dracula by a number of years and is a fantastic vampire story about a young adolescent girl who is basically endangered by a vampire. Really, really good stuff. Contemporary stuff, I don't think it gets better than Neil Gaiman's The Graveyard Book, which just won both the Newbery Award and the Hugo Award this past year, and which is the way I'm ending my class that I'm currently teaching on the Gothic imagination. And certainly any of the old classics, Melmoth the Wanderer, Vathek, The Monk, Mysteries of Udolpho, The Italian, all the way back to Castle of Otranto. I know several of these are available, actually free, in audiobook versions from LibriVox.org, as well as online texts from Project Gutenberg as well.
All right, very good.
Didn't you mention Lovecraft? I'm stunned.
Oh, that's just blanket reading for anyone, gothic or otherwise. Read yourself some H.P. Lovecraft. good stuff. Yeah.
Well, thank you all for being with us. Great conversation and lots to think about.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure getting to be a special guest with you gentlemen.
Well, we hope you're going to come back.
I was going to say, Amy, this is just your first appearance on the show.
Exactly.
You're Potter Pundits Plus here.
So, do you know what Halloween is?
No.
That's the day Harry's
paradise. This year is the 28th. Well, it's the 28th anniversary of their death.
Oh.
Today, Harry would be 29 years old. Harry and I would be the same age.
I would have been in the same class and house as Luna. How awesome is that?
Would you have made moves on her, Frankie?
Yes.
He would have.
That's how I am.
Talking about it.
He's like, yes.
He's like, how dare you say yes.
I would hold the Titanic. That I would be like, let me draw you, Luna.
Oh.
Yeah, I'd be in Harry's class. Or he'd be 1 year behind me.
He'd be in your class.
No, I'd be a seventh year and he'd be a sixth.
So you'd be like Cho?
Yeah, you'd be Cho's like year.
I'd be Cho's year.
And you'd be one of the Gryffindors, like, that were smarter than the Ravenclaw, and she'd be all pissy with you. Like, I hate her.
Well, thank you.
Oh,
that's very nice, Frank.
Well, I think you're smart. Oh,
all right.
Can I talk for a minute about the music that's coming out this week from Leaky this month?
Please.
Okay, let me explain to you the difference between creating the Jingle Spell CD and creating the LeakyCon CD.
Oh.
When we create the LeakyCon Live CD, every band has like 5 tracks. And so now the guy who's mixing the tracks doesn't have just 30 songs to kind of tweak the levels on. He's got 30 songs, each of which have 5 tracks. So we're dealing with a giant, enormous, huge, much more bit of work, which is why this is taking so long. However, it is almost done. It is almost being produced. It will be out in time for Jingle Spells 3, which is also being produced. So look in the next month on Leaky for a lot of great holiday music you can buy. And we are going to have a massive packing party the first week of December to get them all out to you in time.
Are you
going
to be able to offer combined shipping on those two CDs?
Yes.
That'll make it worth it.
Here.
Hmm?
That'll make it worth it for the people that wait for the LeakyCon thing to have free shipping on Jingle Spell.
And the reason I haven't emailed those people yet, for those of you who are listening to this, is because I want to have a more specific ship date for you when I email you the date about the delay. But thank you for being patient. Those of you who have been, please be assured that the results will be worth it and that all your money goes towards a very good cause. So
awesome.
There.
I can't wait. I'm excited for Jingle Spells, too. Very excited.
It's Jingle Spells 3.
Jingle Spells 3, actually. So.
We did the same joke at the same time.
I beat you, Doodle.
Punch you in the face through this microphone.
We didn't sing. We still should do a little song. The four of us need to do a little thing. I'm still going to hold
out. Yeah, we can think of some sort of like Christmas carol that involves like four things, and we can just twist them into the houses and make them all like very typical about the houses. Would be hilarious.
We Four Kings.
We Four Houses.
We Four Houses of Hogwarts are.
Why are you being that guy?
No. What is that?
At least it's not the snake singing. That would be awesome.
Oh, the snake! I miss the snake.
I love the snake.
I was doing the ghost earlier in the show, if anybody caught on. I'm going,
I caught a little ghost.
Go.
Do you do that at work, Frankie? Do you make little voices at work?
Not yet. I don't want to scare everyone away.
Frankie is probably like serious businessman Frankie who doesn't joke around yet because he's all...
No, I think that's my downfall. I think because I joke around too much, people, when they can take me seriously, they're like, oh. Because, like, when I've been interning at Jim Henson a few times this past month, and when I had lunch with the lady and my friend who got me the thing, she was like, I was a little nervous at first when we hired you because it's a really quiet office. I was like, what? I thought you were either you're going to be too loud or you get really bored out of your mind. And I'm like, no! I just, when I'm hanging out with my friends at lunch and stuff, I can be a little silly. But I know how to turn it off. It was just, so I'm like, oh no, do people see me like that?
Like, oh, yep. Doodles. And when you are quiet, I'm just worried that you're like either really ticked off or really upset about something. Like the whole first week of tour.
I already talked to you about that. I was nothing but you guys.
I know.
John! Go ahead. I forgot to tell you guys something. I just remembered it. It's totally unrelated and just popped into my head.
Oh, I love that.
Remember our whole giant discussion about haggis?
Oh, yeah.
I recently tried blood pudding.
Ew, why?
Oh, God. I don't even think I could try blood pudding.
It was not very good. I mean, it wasn't, but I wasn't grossed out. It was just something I don't care for. But I don't think it was absolutely
I don't know why that people think that needs to be food.
I don't understand either. I don't understand.
It's like congealed blood and, like, granola or something.
And oatmeal. It's blood and oatmeal. And I cannot believe I tried it. Honestly. But
I wouldn't even feed that to my animals.
I was in Scotland recently.
If I had animals.
And it was in front of me, and it was...
Vampires
said,
made it.
You know...
Yeah, might as well ever call and be like, sure, yummy granola.
Vampires like it.
I just wanted to tell you that, because I know we've had many discussions about that on podcast, so I thought it would be a fun little tidbit.
That sounds like something the Cullens would eat to keep them regular.
Ew, John.
John.
What?
So gross.
John, what are you dressing up as Halloween this? Because last year we were together, this year we are not. I want to know what your costume is going to be.
I know, last year we were in New York for Halloween.
We were. Oh my God, that's right. Weird.
Yes, but what are you going
to
be this year?
That was a party we went to.
I know. Oh. It was awesome. It was fun. You were like a little genie man.
Yeah. Was I?
You were like Alibaba.
Yeah.
I don't know who you were.
I think I was Aladdin.
You were Aladdin.
I'm being Bobby Ray Cyrus.
What?
Or Stewart. Bobby Ray Stewart. No, Robbie Ray Stewart. That's his name.
Who's that?
He's the dad on Hannah Montana.
You're doing Hannah Montana, are you?
That's creepy, John.
Well, we were going to do the Mickey's Trick or Treat thing at Disneyland.
Oh.
So we needed Disney costumes.
Not Disney.
It's Disney Channel.
No, it's not Disney. Don't give them that much credit.
But Hannah Montana, John.
It's fine.
But that's also Miley Cyrus, who doesn't do anything unless her boyfriend says
it. Yeah, sure.
Sorry.
Thank you, Miley Cyrus.
Sorry, did I say that out loud? Maybe it was just in my head.
Okay.
No.
It must have been.
Oh, so it's a bad role model. Okay,
you
are
going to get spammed.
I don't care. Such a bad role model.
Get your head in the game.
Stop it, John. Where's the Raven one? Go get the Raven
one. I have to find it.
Do you know, by the way, I've discovered, because I've played over the past month to kind of chill my brain out and turn it off once in a while. I spent about an hour a week or something playing World of Warcraft.
What, Melissa?
I swear to God.
When did you start this?
I started about a month ago.
What are you?
Josh, I'm a something. I don't know. I don't know these things well. I'm a thing with a bow. I don't know.
You're a hunter, but are you a human, an elf, what?
An elf.
You're an elf? Are you a blood elf or a night elf?
Horde.
You're a horde. You're a blood elf.
Yes.
They are beautiful. You are a blood elf hunter?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, you're such a nerd.
Yes, that's why I play with Josh, but I play, like, it's a great way to sort of turn your mind off when you've been going for 19 hours and you just need to chill out a minute, you know?
Yeah.
And there are monsters in it called Ravenclaw.
No, there's not.
I swear to God.
What?
They're called Ravenclaw,
Where are
I swear.
You? What land are you in?
And Warner Brothers is not suing them? Sorry.
It's called Ravenclaw. I was...
What's Ravenclaw?
Where are you?
There are monsters in World of Warcraft called Ravenclaw.
What do they look like?
Ravenclaw, and then there's a bunch of different kinds of them.
What do they look like? Are they harpies?
They're like zombie-looking things.
Zombie?
Creepy.
But are they like birds, though? I mean, why would they be called Ravenclaw? Are they bird-like? I mean, I don't know anything about this game, so...
I think they just used the name. I don't know. I'll look it up. Hold on a second. Ravenclaw.
Ravens do have claws.
Thule Ravenclaw. There's a character named Thule Ravenclaw. There's a Ravenclaw band.
Wow.
Hold on, I'll tell you in a second. There's the Raven's Claw, which is an actual claw of a raven, so that's different. Ravenclaw band as an item.
What level are you?
I think it's like a thresher or something. No, hold on a second.
I used to play that a couple years ago, and I haven't played it in a really long time, but it's a lot of fun.
There's a Ravenclaw slave, a Ravenclaw regent. I'm just looking stuff up on the internet now. I don't know.
So it's like a house elf?
You know, no.
Shut up. Ravenclaw Drudger. Ravenclaw not Thresher. That's the one I've seen before. Is the Ravenclaw Drudger?
Is there a link to it? Like an image you can link us to?
Wait. I'll tell you. Oh, God, it's so gross. Hold on. I'll give it to you guys on the Skype. There.
Oh, those guys. Yeah, those are weird. You have to collect their bones. You're, like, what level are you? Like, are you, like, level...
Oh,
like,
creepy. 10?
I don't know.
Melissa, this is what you do, really?
Although,
what do you do,
this
Melissa?
Is what I do with all my time.
When you're not driving your Maserati, you're doing that. You're hanging out with, like, ghouls.
No,
okay.
This is the fun thing to do on this, because, you know, we all need that time, that decompression time, and Josh got me into it, and
I enjoy
it, but I'm not, I barely know anything about the game. I just run around killing things.
Got a girl.
Yeah, and then I ran into these Ravenclaw things, and I was like, oh my God, this is Ravenclaw! And nobody gets it, except you guys.
Josh got it, right?
Aww.
Well, Josh, I wasn't playing with Josh at the time that I found the Ravenclaw thing, so I haven't talked with him about it.
Have you, are you playing with people, or just with Josh?
No, I'm not in a guild.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that!
There's nothing wrong with it. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it, except that if I was in a guild, I'd be putting in way too much time that I don't have this kind of time.
And that's why I was asking the question, because when and if I get my new computer, I might play again a little bit because my computer can handle it. And so if you're on there, I'll make a character on the same realm.
Oh, good, on the same server.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I was asking.
Don't be a jerk, Melissa.
Look, guilds are awesome. It's a lot of fun. I would be such a crap addition to a guild.
Oh, I was never good at guilds because... I was never intelligent enough to, like, level my character properly. I just liked having fun, and people get all pissy with me when I didn't do stuff right. I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't play this 80 hours a week like you. I just have fun with it.
A lot of people do, though. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's one of those things that they have so much awkward ownership, quote-unquote, over it, and it's like, it's a game. Calm down.
Well, I think it's a really, really, really well-done game.
It's like, very well-done. It's really cool. Like, I played it for... on and off, like, started in 2005, my senior year of high school, of college, and then I probably haven't played it for 2 or 3 years now, so I've played it for a good, like, kind of 3 years on and off, but yeah, a year and a half, about 2 years, 2.5 years on and off, like, I play for a month or two, not play for 4 months, play for a month. It was a lot of fun.
Right. I think Josh said something where he linked our accounts where I'm leveling really fast.
Well, I think, so you know, I think they did. They've updated this stuff so that you can level much faster than they've adjusted.
John and Sue are like, oh, we don't have no idea what you're talking about right now. It's an MMORPG, which I know a lot of our listeners will be, you know, familiar with. It's just
the web
literally
series,
means
the
massively
Guild
multiplayer.
Is based off of that game.
The that's to be honest, that's what got me interested in checking this out.
Yeah.
Is the Guild? It's Felicia Day's web series, which is hilarious. If you've never watched
it's
it, go to
really
watchtheguild.com. So funny. Have you seen the Do You Want to Date My Avatar video?
I have it on my iPod.
Yes, it's hilarious.
Amazing. Yeah.
Beautiful.
So that's what this is about. Apparently, she, the actress, spent literally 2 years of her life playing this game and doing nothing else.
Wow.
And so she created a web series about it.
What a dork.
We're all dorks. Nobody, we're not throwing dork stones here.
I get to say who's a dork and who isn't.
I'm just amazed. It's a Ravenclaw thing. Like, nobody's says, hey, wait a second.
There are some Harry Potter.
Yeah,
some
I'm actually
Potter
very amazing. It's just,
There are some Harry Potter references in the game. Like, there's characters that look like characters. It's funny.
Yeah,
really?
But
yeah, you'll
just
find them. They're NPCs.
I'm just amazed.
They have nothing to do with the storyline. Sometimes it's random quests. But it's just, and it's not done in, like, it's tasteful, and it's just kind of fun. I forget where they are, but you can probably wiki them or Google it, and you can probably find them. It's like, but you're on the Horde side, so it's going to be hard. A lot of it's because they're humans, so they'd be on the Alliance side.
Well, for those of us that don't play these games, do you have to pay to play this? Are they generating revenue?
I'm on a free thing for the moment, but I think you have to pay like $15 a month.
Yeah, it's $15 a month.
But I'm still flummed. I'm not trying to be mean on anybody.
I feel
anything.
Like it's something that's gone under the radar, Sue.
Yes.
I feel like it's something that has just
flummoxed.
Nobody, like, how can something go under the radar in a game like World of Warcraft that has like 15 million people?
Can we report them?
It?
Exactly. Wow.
I think we're reporting them right now.
Way to go, Matt.
We're going to get banned from the game.
Honestly, I don't think it's under the radar. It's one of those things that it's Raven, like,
they're not trading on Ravenclaw. I mean, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny,
is Ravenclaw,
tiny,
is that a
tiny, tiny part of the game. Yes.
Yes, it's Archer. They shut down dinners. I'm wow. Okay, never mind.
They did shut down a dinner. They did shut down a dinner in London. A woman made a Harry Potter-themed feast. Her name was, like, Lady Marmite or something.
Yes.
And they shut her down.
Wait, they what?
They shut her down. She wasn't allowed to have a hair.
Yeah, well, there's this phenomenon called, like, pop-up restaurants or something in Britain where basically you go around to people's houses and they cook for you, which just sounds very unsafe. And, and one did a Harry Potter thing and she got shut down.
Oh, no.
That's crazy.
I don't know, but I'm still amazed at Ravenclaw. I mean, I guess maybe because we're immersed in that Harry Potter world, it just, ow.
It also resembles, it has absolutely, you can see from the picture, absolutely no resemblance to
None.
Anything Harry Potter. I mean, the thing is a zombie.
Thank
the thing
God.
Is a gross, I mean, they also have an item in the thing called the Raven's Claw, so it makes sense if they could pull that name from it. Like, if it ever really went to quote-unquote, you know,
sure.
court or whatever, they'd have a real argument on their hands, so they're probably just ignoring it.
It's
funny, though. Very funny. And then, you know, you're playing the game, there are
wow.
people around because you see them talking in the chat, but you're in your own house. So I'm walking literally on this road on the game, and I see, you know, in my periphery, a Ravenclaw, whatever, and I'm looking around me going, does nobody else see this? And there's nobody around me. Because it's just so weird. When you're in the game, you just feel like you're surrounded by people and you're not. It's a totally, yeah, I'm trying to really kind of avoid the massive suck in, but so far it's been okay. So far it's not been a massively obsessed.
It's a lot of fun.
You turn your brain off.
Well, it's kind of fun. It's cool that you play. Like, maybe in a couple months when I get a little more settled and able to afford a new computer,
I'd like to play. That'd be fun. You, me, and Josh, man, we tear things up.
I have some characters that I can unfreeze. Like, I have a level 50 something gnome mage and a level 60 something gnome mage and a level 45 blood elf paladin. And her name's Frack. But spelled with a PH. Because she's a girl.
Oh, very funny. I have a name that Leaky Staffords would enjoy.
What is
because
it?
The Blood Elves have really bright green eyes, really bright glowing eyes.
Oh, are you Lily?
No.
Oh, what?
No, I'm not telling my name on Pottercast.
Oh, you are a
chicken. Then type it to
There's
me right
no
now.
Way.
Type
There's
it to me
no
right
way.
Now.
No way.
How many people do you think listen to the show and play your little game?
There's a lot, John.
Probably a lot.
But it's just a server thing.
Someone
you don't
tell
what server you're on,
it's
probably good, but...
And also, it's not a privacy thing. It's when I go on this game, I don't want to be... You know, I'm not a social person. I'm shutting my brain off so that I can actually sleep. That's what I'm doing when I play this game. You know?
Try it to
I can't be social, I'll tell you. But Josh, who's from Leaky, you know, he's a very, very fun guy. And when I first made a character, he showed up as his level 80, which is the highest, you know, whatever. And he shows up, and you have, I didn't know this at the time, but you have, like, these pets that your character can have. So he shows up with, like, 12 pets, and they're all chopping around him. And then this box, he throws this box on the ground, and a disco ball comes out, and music starts playing, and everybody starts dancing. I was like, Josh, only you. Of course you show up at the party.
Yeah, because you know
that. Vera would be awesome. Oh, man. Good for you, then. Well, you know?
Well, it's something, we all need that, you know?
Oh. Oh. Okay. Sorry.
What?
You get it, Frack? I just told him my name.
Okay.
Frack, you get it? Oh!
Hit rewind.
I just got it. Took me a minute. I'm like, what? That's great.
I love it.
Okay. Okay, I think we've dragged this out long enough.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's funny.
So, John, don't eat all of your candy this weekend. Get them trick or treat.
You guys know, one year, I rationed my candy so much that I had one peanut butter cup left on Easter, and then I ate it on Easter because I knew I would get more Easter candy.
That's awesome, Frank. That is strategic candyizing if there ever was. Way to go.
There was a couple of times when, like, I wanted a candy for my little stash, and I was like, too late, because I had this, only had this one piece left. And then once I, when Easter came around, I was like, I can eat it! And I opened it, and it was all, like, white.
Gross. You ate a white piece of food? And
that's gross.
Oh, I know. Who would eat
white food? I've done that.
Uh-huh.
That's gross.
Especially, like, white meat. Or not meat, quote-unquote meat.
I think we forget, but don't.
Right. Well, I think it's time, until next time, guys, to keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be Ravenclaw.
Keep each other safe.
Keep safe.
Good night.
Oh, my God.
We've missed it.
W3.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.